Nicole hosts Easter every year. That's why she shops at BJ's Wholesale Club, stocking up on spiral ham, baked goods, fresh flowers, candy, and 5 dozen eggs.
I've got a lot of baskets to fill.
Nicole's not worried because she knows she can save big and get it all done in one trip.
It's like winning the Easter egg hunt.
When you save, everyone wins. Get a $15 digital coupon when you spend $150 in one transaction now through April 5th. Visit BJ's.com/Easter coupon for details. BJ's, your Easter destination.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchlow, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Up in this hour, we'll be reacting to the first night of the Champions League. Not a good night for the English sides, as Liverpool went down 2-0 away in Napoli at the start of their defence of their European crown. And not a good night for Frank Lampard in his first Champions League game in charge of Chelsea. They lost by 1-0 at home at Stamford Bridge against Valencia. Ross Barkley missed a penalty for Chelsea in the latter stages of that game. So we'll be reacting to Chelsea's defeat last night with Oliver Harbour, Chelsea correspondent for football.london. We'll also then be looking ahead to tonight's action, two more English sides in action, two long away trips for Premier League clubs. Defending Premier League champions Manchester City travel out to Ukraine to take on Shakhtar Donetsk, with only one fit senior centre-back available to Pep Guardiola. Fernandinho expected to start at centre-back alongside Nicolas Otamendi. And also Tottenham have a trip out to Greece to take on Olympiakos. That's a 5-6 kickoff this evening. Two other massive, massive games in the Champions League tonight. Two of the biggest games of the week, really. Paris Saint-Germain take on Real Madrid, but both sides are having to deal with plenty of injuries and suspension for PSG. None of Mbappe, Cavani or Neymar available for tonight's game. Neymar's a suspension, Mbappe and Cavani due to injury. Real Madrid without a number of players as well in their squad. And also Atletico Madrid against Juventus. That's a game in Madrid at the one, the Metropolitano. Obviously the scene of the Champions League final this year, where Liverpool won 2-0 against Tottenham. Obviously, no Griezmann at Atletico Madrid anymore, but Joao Felix is the kind of new up-and-coming star for Atletico Madrid after his £110 million move from Benfica this summer, up against obviously Cristiano Ronaldo's Juventus. So a big, big game there. Plenty to look out for in the Champions League tonight. So we'll be looking ahead to Manchester City's trip to Donetsk with Andy Hampson, who is out in Ukraine. So we'll get his views ahead of what could be a tough away trip, and a trip that Manchester City know pretty well. This is the third time in four seasons that Manchester City have been drawn alongside Shakhtar in the group stages. We'll then turn our attention back to Premier League matters and talking about Burnley with Joe Redman from the Turfcast podcast after their 1-1 draw against Brighton last weekend. So we'll be turning our attention to more stuff at Premier League towards the end of the hour. And then in the second hour between 2 and 3, we'll obviously be doing our Championship fan show. We'll be talking to Stanley Hughes from the One Stream in Bristol podcast about Bristol City's impressive start to the season and a big game on the weekend as well for Bristol City. They take on Swansea at home at Ashton Gate. We'll also be talking to James Marriott from the Sheffield Wednesday podcast. He will probably be pretty happy with their result on Sunday. 2-0 winners away at Huddersfield in Gary Monk's first game in charge. So we'll get James's view on how he saw Gary Monk's first game in charge. Obviously, the win is what they would have hoped for, but we'll get his views on the performance as well as that. We'll also be talking to Matt Holden, Blackburn fan and host of the 1985 podcast, about their start. They're in mid-table and they've got Reading up next away at the Medeski Stadium on the weekend. And then also Martin Adkins will be joining us from the SE7 podcast, talking all things Charlton. Charlton suffered their first defeat of the season on the weekend, a disappointing home defeat against Birmingham by 1-0. They are still third, 2 points off Swansea and Leeds. Their next game is away at Wigan on the weekend. So that's all to come over the next couple of hours with me, Kieran Critchard. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. If you're a Chelsea or a Liverpool fan, how disappointed are you with your team's defeats in the Champions League last night? If you're a Manchester City or Tottenham fan looking ahead to tonight's action, how confident are you that that your sides can win away from home in the Champions League, which is never an easy thing to do. And then obviously Championship fans, if you want to have your view heard on your club starts the season, make sure you contact us here at Love Sport Radio. We are going to start by looking back at last night's games. And up first, we're going to talk about the defending European champions, Liverpool, who fell to a 2-0 defeat in Naples last night against Napoli. Obviously, these two sides came up against each other in the group stages last season, both games ending in 1-0 to the home side. But unfortunately for Liverpool, it was two late goals that meant that they fell to that defeat. Goals by Dries Mertens from the spot and also Fernando Llorente sealed a 2-0 win for Napoli. It was a pretty even contest for 75 minutes of that game. But as I said, those late goals meant that Napoli get their win. And in the other game in the group, Red Bull Salzburg smashed Genk by 6-2. Which means that Salzburg and Napoli top the group. But that's not all, really. Obviously, there was quite a lot of controversy surrounding Napoli's first goal, and it came from the penalty spot. That Dries Mertens penalty gave Napoli the lead with about 10 minutes to go. But it all surrounded the decision to give the penalty. An incident, a tussle between Andrew Robertson and Jose Callejon was very debatable, to say the least. You'll get my views in just a few seconds. But first, we'll get the views of the Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp, who said that further clarification is needed when it comes to the video assistant referee.
Now, I could say a lot of things about it, but then I would look like a bad loser. Actually, I'm not maybe not the best loser in the world, but I'm not bad. It's a decision made by human beings. I think when you see the pictures, then it's clear. But the rule is like, if it's not a clear mistake, and now still human beings decide what is a clear mistake.
However, despite the defeat to Napoli, Jurgen Klopp said that they mustn't dwell too much on that defeat.
It was very decisive in that moment for sure, but we cannot change it anymore. So I think it will help in the long term, but as long as human beings make the decision, there will be still potential for failure. That's how it is. We are all like this.
That was Jurgen Klopp's views on last night's game and on the game in general, but also the specifics of the penalty that was given. Now, a bit of context surrounding it, with around 10 minutes to go, Jose Callejon had broken into the Liverpool penalty area. Andrew Robertson had stuck out a leg, but there was no initial contact. But Jose Callejon went down and the referee gave the penalty. VAR then checked it, supposedly. But the penalty stood, and then Dries Mertens gave Napoli the lead. Now, obviously, I am going to be a little bit biased. That's inevitable because I'm a Liverpool fan. But the views on VAR are a very general one. It isn't just in relation to this. It's in relation to the first 5 weeks of the Premier League season, actually, more than anything, more than just last night, because the slight difference with last night is obviously it's within UEFA. And even that's a problem, that the way that the referees approach these games is different in UEFA compared to in the Premier League. Anyone that knows me knows that I've always been a massive campaigner for VAR and a massive supporter of it, believing that we should have had it miles before we have done that. You've seen the difference that goal line technology has had for many seasons now, and the difference that's made, that we now categorically know whether the ball went over the line or it didn't. VAR was supposed to be brought in to get rid of howlers, and was supposed to help referees and maybe not make the game absolutely perfect, but as close to that as possible. Now, it was only a week ago that the head of the chief referees in this country, Mike Riley, had admitted that VAR had got four decisions incorrect in the Premier League. We think back to Newcastle's goal against Watford. There was a handball by Isaac Hayden in the build-up. That should have been ruled out. You think of Leicester's Yuri Tielemans' tackle on Callum Wilson, that should have been a red card. You had David Silva, should have had a penalty against Bournemouth. Jefferson Lerma had stepped on David Silva's foot. That these are a number of decisions that VAR had got wrong. They'd admitted to it. Now, you might say at least it's a little bit of responsibility, a little bit of accountability for these mistakes. But this is pretty appalling, because these decisions that we can see that they've admitted to getting wrong, you wonder how on earth these people who have been trained to be referees cannot make these right decisions. That we're not talking about subjective 50-50 decisions that you can understand the decision of a referee. These are absolutely categorical ones. You think of that Yuri Tiedemann's tackle on Callum Wilson. That could have, with that one sound too drastic, that could have ended Callum Wilson's career. It was a horrendous tackle, nowhere near the ball. And yet, number one, the referee doesn't see it. And then number two, the cheek of the guy, of the official in the VAR at Stockley Park, not to overturn it. The officials that are at Stockley Park, that are in charge of the VAR, don't want to damage these highly inflated egos of the referees on the pitch. They don't want to undermine them. They don't want to overrule that decision. But we're getting to a ridiculous point. It then continued on Saturday in the Liverpool-Newcastle game, with John Matip and Jamal Lascelles, that Lascelles pretty much rugby tackled John Matip to the ground. Now you can have your view on whether the referee should have seen it in the first place, but then the VAR, not to make a decision, and to put it into a bit of context, Mike Dean was the man in charge of the VAR on Saturday for that game, didn't give that a penalty, and yet on Monday night between Aston Villa and West Ham, he gives a second yellow to Arthur Masuaku on Anwar El Ghazi for absolutely no contact. It is absolutely stunning that the same man can make a completely different decision, one where there is a rugby tackle and the other where there is virtually no contact, and yet one's a foul and one's not. It is utterly ludicrous. And after last night, I've got to a point where I think VAR is an absolute waste of time. It is a joke. We've been campaigning for it for so long, hoping to bring it into the game. But while we have these clowns, these Muppets in charge of officiating in this country, there is absolutely no point of having the video assistant replay. Until we can have robots in charge of football games, then it is stupid to have these morons officiating these games. That I would rather go back to a time where we did have controversy, where some people might not be particularly happy with a decision, but to restore the entertainment, because these guys, even with technology, can't even make the right decision. That is how utterly ludicrous a situation we're in now. We have this technology, we have the ability to overturn decisions, and yet so many mistakes have already been made. There is human error, and then there's just downright stupidity and blindness from officials. It is getting utterly ridiculous. Last night, Jose Callejon absolutely cheated the referee, and he bought it, because that was a dive. That was 100% a dive. And I cannot believe that not only did the referee get conned by that, but then the VAR, sitting there in his seat, just doesn't bother to do anything, doesn't use his eyes, and decides to allow the game to continue. Who, looking at that, genuinely believes that that is an actual foul? It is utterly ridiculous, and I think we should scrap VAR, get rid of it, because at the moment it is being used in a completely ridiculous way, that the VAR officials don't want to undermine, don't want to damage these little egos of the referees. Oh, I might be hurt by someone overruling a decision. Well, with some of the decisions we've seen this season, that we need these decisions to be overturned because they are ridiculous, and you look stupid when you make a decision like Yuri Tiedemann's lack of a red card against Bournemouth, when Jefferson Lerma steps on David Silva's foot. You look utterly ridiculous when you have the technology and you do not overturn the decision. It is utterly, utterly stupid. And I think I've been such a supporter of VAR for so many years, but the way I'm seeing it used at the moment, absolutely no point. Get rid of VAR. It's a stupid idea with the officials that we currently have in place, and we should just move on and only bring it back when either we have robots or these people are willing to actually use their eyes rather than not want to damage their egos. It is ridiculous. But fair play to Napoli. They took the chances when they came at the end of the game, and Liverpool were sloppy for the second goal. We can complain about the first goal and the penalty that was given, but it was just poor defending. It was mistakes. And in Champions League football, away from home, if you make silly mistakes like that, you get punished for them. There is no getting away from that. But the silver lining for all of us Liverpool fans, we lost in Naples last year, and we still won the Champions League. So silver linings and all of that. Then we'll be moving now our attention. I'll stop ranting about VAR. I'm probably a bit fed up of me chatting about VAR now. We'll move on to all things Chelsea next. We'll be talking about Frank Lampard's first game in charge, potentially an injury to Mason Mount, who's made such an impressive start to the season. Also that Ross Barkley missed penalty.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Chelsea after their loss against Valencia last night. 1-0, Rodrigo scored the winning goal for the Spaniards, obviously under new management. Marcelino was only sacked last week. And after their defeat yesterday, obviously the controversy was surrounding Ross Barkley being the man to take the penalty for Chelsea that was missed. And Chelsea forward Willian says that he has no issues with his teammate taking charge of the situation.
Yeah, I want to take it, but he was confident to take it. This is football. He missed the penalty, but could be me that miss, or Jorginho, or whatever. So football is like this. But, when you win together. When you lose together.
It was an interesting situation that that Ross Barkley was the man chosen. He came off the bench and was the man chosen to take that penalty. And obviously, it's costly if you miss it. Everyone gets on your back and starts criticising you. And you wonder, Jorginho has taken a number of penalties for Chelsea over the last few years. And it's interesting that he didn't take it yesterday. Interesting to hear Frank Lampard's views, that the Chelsea manager feels that his team deserved at least a draw from the game.
I think we created enough in the game. Not lots of fantastic chances, but good chances. And obviously a penalty. And then we concede, I think, from the one shot on target. So a harsh lesson in Champions League football. I think a game that we played pretty well in, and we lose it.
I think that is a pretty honest assessment by Frank Lampard, and that's the reality. I think the way you'd sum it up is it is a harsh reality check for Frank Lampard that Champions League football is not an easy thing. Valencia may not be a European giant, but it is still not easy to win. And moments, if you don't get those moments right, you get punished for it. I'm sure that our next guest will have a view on the decision to choose Ross Barkley as the penalty taker for that penalty last night. I'm delighted to say that Oliver Harbord, Chelsea correspondent for Football.London, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Oliver. What was your reaction to, before the penalty was actually taken, and then we'll talk about the penalty, what was your reaction to Ross Barkley being the man to take that penalty?
Yeah, I mean, he has taken a few before in pre-season for Chelsea. He's looked quite comfortable. He took one in the Super Cup penalty shootout as well, and it's taken him very well. And so obviously Frank Lampard has a lot of trust in him to be his penalty taker. I would just say, though, you know, he hadn't been on the pitch very long. He'd only been on the pitch for about 7 minutes when the penalty was taken. Jorginho and Willian, obviously, a lot more confident in the game. And you probably would have thought that those two should have been the sort of front runners. Obviously, Jorginho took the one in the Super Cup as well when Ross Barkley wasn't on the pitch. So, yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a strange one for a lot of Chelsea fans. Obviously, he's not really a notorious penalty taker. He didn't take a lot for Everton either when he was there. So, yeah, slightly strange, and obviously has backfired. But, you know, Lampard said he's the penalty taker. Barkley said that he would take another one as well if he got the chance. So, you know, that's probably the way that they'll carry on. And if he gets another opportunity, they'll probably get Barkley to take it and then put this behind them.
Let's talk then about the penalty itself. My view, and I was having a chat with producer Laurie in the break, that I think at this level that players should be able to pick a spot and be able to score pretty much most times unless there's a ridiculous save that's made. Now, Ross Barkley hit the bar on this occasion. What's your view on penalty takers? Do you think that if a penalty taker takes 20, they should be able to score pretty close to 20 of them? Or do you think there are lots of different factors that mean actually taking a penalty with the pressure on it, that it isn't that easy?
Yeah, it's always difficult. I mean, there's obviously a lot of pressure, especially you have to take that into account, that if this was sort of the fifth minute of the game, then the pressure probably isn't on as much and he's probably going to be a lot calmer when he's taking it. As I said, you know, the fact that he had just come on as well and his body's probably still full of adrenaline. Barkley, the penalties I've seen him take in pre-season, he's one of these guys that does put a lot of power behind the ball, a bit sort of Harry Kane-esque, if you like, really puts his foot through it. With sort of a bit of curl as well to try and get it into the sort of the corners of the net. And he just overhit it. He just absolutely went with too much adrenaline. That's why I kind of think that maybe the Jorginho or Willian would have been a lot calmer to take the penalty in that situation. Obviously, a lot more experienced as well. But yeah, look, we all expect Chelsea players or any player really to score a penalty when they step up. It's always the goalkeeper where, you know, they can be the hero. And he's got to do better than that, obviously. I just think the adrenaline and the way he takes his penalties just all sort of merged into a bit of a poor one.
Let's talk about a few of the other things to take out of the game. And a bit of a blow early doors inside 16 minutes. Mason Mount was taken off after a challenge from Francis Coquelin. Do you think that challenge maybe deserved more than a yellow card? And how serious could this be? And how damaging could this be for Chelsea that one of their young stars that has made an impressive start to the season could be out for a little while?
Yeah, I mean, first on the challenge, obviously, it's one of those when you look back at the replay and you sort of have a still of the photo of it, it looks a dreadful tackle. I mean, I guess you could say in Coughlin's defence, he did go through the ball and he's just sort of obviously caught him a little high. But it looked pretty awful. And obviously the reaction from Mount, he knew straight away he was in trouble. He tried to carry on and he kicked the ball once and you could see how much pain he was even by doing a 5-yard pass. So, you know, and for Chelsea, he is a massive blow because he's been a very important figure for Chelsea already. You know, 3 Premier League goals this season. He's looked very good, sort of playing off the left more than in midfield. And, you know, it completely changes everything. It changes the complexion of the game. Lampard obviously made the decision for Pedro to go on and that didn't really work out over the 90 minutes. And now for the future as well, he sort of who he replaces it with, whether he goes for Pulisic and obviously they've got a huge game against Liverpool. He might well go for Pedro again just to have that experience. But it is a massive blow. And, you know, Lampard said after the game that it will take 24 hours or 48 hours to sort of assess the injury to see how bad it is. But Chelsea have been a bit unlucky with injuries, so they could do with it being as short as possible.
What did you make of the fact that Chelsea again have gone with a back three? I was listening to Frank Lampard's comments after the Wolves win and saying that they had adjusted to play against Wolves who do play a back three. He then went with a back three again last night. Do you think this is something that Frank Lampard will continue with, or is he still trying to experiment to try and find whether a back four is better or a back three suits them more?
Yeah, I think he's still trying to experiment a little bit. And also, I do believe that, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that N'Golo Kanté is not around at the moment. And so they don't have quite the defensive security in front of them without him. You know, Jorginho and Kovacic, I think, have played very well actually this season. But both players at times, recovery pace is not really their strength. So at times the back four can look a little exposed. I have to say, I think the back three have looked a lot better over the two games, especially in the first half against Wolves. And then I thought last night, you know, the goal they conceded was a lack of concentration. That actually came from a slightly strange substitution, I have to say. He brought off Zouma to put on Giroud and he moved Aspilicueta into sort of the right centre-back and then Pedro right wing-back. And they just never really settled and then gave away a free kick quite soon after that. So I thought it was a bit of a strange substitution, I have to say. But I think he might persist with the back three, especially if he can get Antonio Rudiger back fit as well. They look, at the moment, a little bit more secure defensively, although obviously they still haven't kept that clean sheet, so you'll keep experimenting, I'm sure.
If we take then a look at some of the other teams in the group, obviously Chelsea's opponents yesterday in the form of Valencia, who have changed their manager in the last week. Ajax won 3-0 at home against Lille, a pretty comfortable victory for them. I think probably you'd say that it's been made clear that Lille are probably going to be the side that are going to finish bottom, but it looks then quite close between the three sides, Chelsea, Valencia and Ajax.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, Lampard said this after the game. I think he's right that the teams in that group all look like they could probably take points off each other. I don't think there's going to be a really set runaway leader in the group. And just the shame of it, though, from last night is obviously it's the first home game. They now have back-to-back away games, first at Lille and then Ajax. I mean, it does put them under real pressure. And obviously they were playing at Valencia side, who, as you say, changed their manager, everything behind the scenes. You know, Valencia is in some turmoil as well. Fans protesting against the president and fans protesting against what's happened. So, you know, last night was really a good opportunity for Chelsea to sort of stamp a marker and they haven't been able to do that. So it obviously puts a lot more pressure now on the Lille game because they have to get a result there, you have to think. And then obviously Ajax as well to get something from there. So, you know, it does put a lot of pressure on Chelsea now going forward. But, you know, 5 games to go, they've still got the chance of picking up 15 points. So, you know, hopefully they'll be able to do that.
And just finally, then, Oliver, looking ahead to the weekend, obviously a pretty huge one at Stamford Bridge on Sunday, Chelsea against my team, Liverpool. When I saw Liverpool go up against Chelsea in the Super Cup, I was actually quite impressed and thought that Chelsea played pretty well on that occasion. Christian Pulisic in particular stood out. It's going to be a very intriguing game because obviously both sides are going to be reeling from losing their first Champions League games last night.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge one, absolutely. I mean, Chelsea as well, for Lampard, he's still not won at home, and obviously last night's defeat is sort of added to that. And, you know, he'll be looking at Sunday and thinking it could be a sort of a real good opportunity to get something on at the weekend against the top team. Obviously, it's going to be very difficult. He'll desperately want N'Golo Kante back fit. You know, Kante has been training, he's just not been match fit. And he was key in the Super Cup, even though he wasn't fully fit then either. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he has the chance to throw Kante back into the position. And then it's seeing how they sort of set up top. I mean, Tammy Abraham has got a lot of plaudits, but he's not come up against a defender like Virgil van Dijk quite yet. So that's going to be an interesting battle as well. Very, very key for Chelsea. They need to, you know, take what they can from the game. And it's going to be taking their chances, because it's not like they're going to get many of them, but they need to take what they can get.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Oliver. That was Oliver Harbord, Chelsea correspondent for football.london, looking back at Chelsea's 1-0 defeat at home against Valencia. And that does put a little bit more pressure on Chelsea's away games then. As I said, I think Lille look like the side that are going to finish bottom. Obviously, they lost Nicolas Pepe and Rafael Leao, two forwards over the summer for big money. So they look like the side that are going to finish bottom. But then Ajax, we saw what they did last season, and even without Frankie de Jong and Matthias de Ligt this season, they're still going to be a difficult team to beat. You think of Dusan Tadic, who scored something like 36 goals in all competitions last season, Hakim Ziyech, David Neres, so plenty of good players in that Ajax side. And then Valencia winning at Chelsea means that when Chelsea travel out to the Mestalla, whether they travel out to Amsterdam to the Johan Cruyff Arena, that this defeat is going to put a little bit more pressure on those away games. If this had been away, it would have been slightly different. But the fact that it was at home means that the away games, which are always difficult in the Champions League, are going to be made that bit more challenging. But it is a massive, massive game on Sunday. 4:30 kickoff at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea versus Liverpool. Just talking about a few of the other games in the Champions League tonight. Paris Saint-Germain take on Real Madrid in one of the highlights of this week's action. PSG out without their best front three, Cavani, Mbappe and Neymar. Surely the emphasis is going to be on Mauro Icardi after his loan move from Inter Milan over the summer. Real Madrid, plenty of injuries and suspension crises to deal with. Marcelo, Modric, Isco all out. Nacho and Ramos, I think, are both suspended. So plenty of changes needed for those sides. And then back in Madrid, Atletico Madrid take on Juventus. Atletico second in the table, 9 points from their first four games. And Juventus obviously have only just kicked off over the last few weeks. Their season in Serie A looking for yet another Scudetto. Will Matthijs de Ligt start at centre-back? Hasn't played a huge amount in the first few weeks. Could we see Aaron Ramsey be involved? It looks unlikely that that is going to be the case. And obviously you can't go talking about Juventus, sorry, without mentioning Cristiano Ronaldo looking to continue his ridiculous scoring record in the Champions League. So that's all to come tonight. Obviously, two English sides involved in action tonight. Tottenham away at Olympiacos, which is a 5-6 kickoff UK time. And up next, we'll be previewing a trip to Shakhtar Donetsk for Manchester City.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fans Show with me, Kieran Crutchfield, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking about Manchester City's travel to Shakhtar Donetsk tonight. We're also going to be talking about Burnley, looking at some of the Premier League action from last weekend, also looking ahead to this weekend's action. And obviously in the next hour, it will be the Championship Fans Show. So any Championship fans out there, make sure you get in contact with us. Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. As I mentioned, Manchester City are making the trip out to Ukraine. Not to Donetsk, actually. Shakhtar aren't able to play in their home stadium. But it is a long trip out, and it won't be easy. Manchester City know what it's like playing against Shakhtar, having been drawn against them for the third time now in the last four seasons. Obviously, a number of injuries that Manchester City have to deal with, in particular at centre-back. Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola, however, isn't concerned if City have to call on Fernandinho to play at centre-half.
It's a challenge and they will do it and they will do well because my players are the best. So we're playing with Dinho, not with Eric, with Taylor, or how we create something. So that is where it is. So football is how not you handle the good situations, you handle the bad ones. And this team did it for the past.
It'll be interesting to hear kind of what Manchester City fans feel about that. on the face of it, the mistakes that John Stones makes and the lack of development, I don't think City fans would be too devastated with the possibility of Fernandinho or Rodri playing at centre-back. You'd imagine with Rodri having started most games in holding midfield that it will be Fernandinho that will fill in tonight and probably for the next few weeks. John Stones supposedly out for the next 5 weeks. Aymeric Laporte could be out until sort of January or February. So they're having to deal with that. And as I said, you look at City's performance on Saturday, fair play to Norwich, and it was an off day for Manchester City. But defensively, they were so all over the place. They were so fragile and they were so vulnerable on Saturday, and the mistakes made by Kyle Walker at right back, Alexander Zinchenko at left back, and then John Stones and Nicolas Otamendi at centre back. They were all over the place. And I don't think City fans actually will be too devastated with the news that John Stones is out. Obviously, the much bigger blow was Aymeric Laporte. There is such a huge gap between Laporte and the other centre-backs at Manchester City. Obviously, Vincent Kompany joined Anderlecht over the summer, and they were interested in Harry Maguire but weren't willing to pay $80 million, which I think is fair enough, that you don't want to go up to that type of a price for Harry Maguire. But they have been sold short now. Now, you couldn't really have foreseen that City within the first month of the season would lose two centre-backs to injuries, but they always looked short, that whoever was going to play alongside Laporte, it was always going to be a vulnerability for Manchester City, and they are going to have to deal with some of these injuries in tonight's game and obviously for the next 4 or 5 weeks while John Stones is out, and then for a number of months before Aymeric Laporte is back sometime in the new year. What would be interesting, actually, I think tonight will be the decision that Pep Guardiola makes at right back, because Kyle Walker has started the season, but when Joao Cancelo signed from Juventus in that swap deal with Danilo over the summer, I thought a couple of months into the season, Cancelo would be ahead of Kyle Walker. He'd be the starting right back at Manchester City. He received glowing praise during his time at Juventus. We've spoken to quite a lot of Italian football experts here on Love Sport, and a number of them that I've spoken to have said that they were so surprised that Juventus were so willing to get rid of Cancelo. He was one of their top players last season, and for Manchester City, it felt like a really good investment in him, a much younger player than Danilo, who went the other way. And it seemed like a much more impressive signing for them. And you wonder, after the mistakes in particular that Kyle Walker made on the weekend, I think we could see Joao Cancelo in action for Manchester City tonight. Ahead of the game, then, manager Pep Guardiola said that getting maximum points away could turn out to be very, very important.
At home we are a strong team, but we know how experienced for last season when we started at home and we lost against Olympique Lyon, and after we were lucky because the other games, the other opponents, they didn't win the games and we won our games, and that's why we could qualify. But it's a short competition, it's 6 games, and you have to be careful.
Pep Guardiola is right in terms of the away games are so important. Now, the contrary argument to that is that Liverpool lost all 3 of their away games in the group stages last season and went on to win the Champions League. But what it means is that then there's less pressure on your home games. Now, obviously, Manchester City will bat themselves in any game in this group stage. You'd imagine with a group of Shakhtar Donetsk, Dinamo Zagreb and Atalanta, I think City probably could and should win all 6, if I'm being honest, but things never seem to quite pan out like that. If City can get a good result, if they can get a win in Shakhtar Donetsk tonight, it just takes so much pressure off the other games. And then you're thinking in the latter stages of the group stages, City would then be able to probably rest quite a lot of players. They've got a decent squad. And if they can win early doors away from home, it then should be plain sailing. City did lose, if you remember, at home, I think it was, in the first game of last season's group stages at home to Lyon. Now, City still progressed, but that was quite a big blow to them early doors. And they know that a trip to Donetsk isn't going to be easy. They've gone out there numerous times in the last few years, having been drawn alongside Shakhtar in the group stages in 3 of the last 4 seasons. So they know not only is it a long trip, but it's going to be a hostile environment. And it's also not going to be an easy game midweek to get yourself up for this game, having lost away at Norwich City last weekend. It isn't going to be easy for them, but you would still imagine City will probably come through it quite easily. As I said, they've got a few interesting selections, in particular in defence. Fernandinho is expected to start alongside Nicolas Otamendi. I think Joao Cancelo will start ahead of Kyle Walker at right back. could we see the return of Benjamin Mendy at left back? Oleksandr Zinchenko had a tough game on Saturday, but then the whole of the Manchester City back four had dreadful games against Norwich. And could we see Benjamin Mendy return? He's a player that promised so much when he joined, was part of that very impressive Monaco side a few years ago, made the big money move over to Manchester City for about £50 million, has suffered quite a bit with injuries, some really bad injuries that he's had over the last few years. I think he has fallen out with Pep Guardiola, in particular with some of his social media antics. Hasn't been something that Pep Guardiola has been a particular big fan of. And so could he see an opportunity tonight? And Zinchenko's done a decent job, actually, for Manchester City at left-back, like actually Fabian Delph did, playing out of position. But when he's fit, Benjamin Mendy is a far superior left-back because he is a natural left-back, whereas Zinchenko isn't. He plays in the midfield on international duty for Ukraine. So if Benjamin Mendy is fit and firing, then he will 100% be the starting left-back. And at right-back, it probably will be João Cancelo going forward. Kyle Walker has had a poor start to the season, is out of the picture, obviously, for England. So he has been dropped, obviously, from Gareth Southgate's last squad. And you'd imagine that João Cancelo will be that man in the very near future that will take that number one jersey. I think it is a matter of weeks and probably months away from Cancelo being the number one at Manchester City. And tonight could be his opportunity for his first start for Manchester City. If not tonight, it might be in the League Cup in a week's time. But you'd imagine that João Cancelo will come in at right back. So we might see a completely different defence, actually, for Manchester City tonight compared to the weekend's game against Norwich, where we could see three of the back four change. No John Stones due to injury. Right back Kyle Walker could be out, and at left back Oleksandr Zinchenko could be out, and we could see João Cancelo, Fernandinho and Benjamin Mendy in. In regards to the other positions, will Pep Guardiola rotate that much? There's no Phil Foden in the squad. He has picked up an injury, so he will not be involved tonight. Could we see Riyad Mahrez come back into the side? Could we see Gabriel Jesus? We know that in attacking areas, Manchester City have an abundance of quality, and they know that whoever they pick, they're going to be full of quality. And does Guardiola go with Riyad Mahrez over Bernardo Silva? Does he go with Gabriel Jesus over Sergio Aguero tonight? So some decisions. I think what's expected is there will be plenty of changes for Manchester City tonight in Shakhtar. Obviously, it's a long trip out to Donetsk, and obviously you're playing in midweek, so you have a weekend midweek. It's the start of this run now where for the next few months you're pretty much going to be playing every weekend, every midweek, so you're going to be playing three games a week, and so expect plenty of changes from Pep Guardiola tonight for Manchester City's trip to Shakhtar Donetsk. What the Champions League has proven over the last few years, going away from home is tough. It is not easy. It doesn't matter who you're up against. For my club, Liverpool, we went to Red Star Belgrade last year, 2 weeks after beating them 4-0 at home, having smashed them. And there was an element of complacency that came in. We just thought we'd turn up and win. In a hostile environment in Belgrade, Liverpool won at the races and lost 2-0. That's an absolute warning to all English sides that if you go away from home and you don't play well, you get punished. And City know they have to turn up tonight. They've played Shakhtar plenty of times over the last few years, and they know in order to get 3 points and get their campaign off to a good start with all 3 points and the win, they know they're going to have to play well tonight. You'd expect City to cruise through this game and also cruise through their group, but with all the defensive changes that we're probably going to see tonight, Shakhtar might look at it and think there's an opportunity tonight to get at Manchester City and really cause them problems. So that is the game at 8 o'clock tonight over in Ukraine, obviously not in Donetsk, but Manchester City will play away at Shakhtar. 8 o'clock kickoff for the defending Premier League champions. And the other English club, Tottenham, they're also in action 5:55 over in Greece against Olympiacos. Plenty of injuries that Tottenham are having to deal with at the moment as well. So what sort of team will Mauricio Pochettino go with? So obviously, that's kind of a lot of the Champions League covered. To finish the Premier League fan show before we move on to the Championship, we are going to turn our attention to more Premier League matters. And up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Burnley.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've talked a lot about the Champions League, but let's get back to some of the Premier League action. And looking back at their 1-1 draw away at Brighton and looking ahead to this weekend's fixtures, we're going to be talking all things Burnley. I'm delighted to say that Joe Redmond from the Turfcast podcast joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Joe. Let's look back then at the 1-1 draw away at Brighton. Jeff Hendricks secured a late equaliser for Burnley. I think Sean Dyche said he wasn't particularly happy with Burnley's second half performance. When you look at it, Brighton are probably a side that's going to be in and around Burnley. Do you look at this as a pretty decent point away from home?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you get any point away from home in the Premier League, you're always on track to achieve what we want to achieve anyway in staying up. It's the home games where our season will be defined. But I've got to agree with Sean. I think that's the first time this season I've come away from the game and thought we didn't really play that well, which is a little bit of a worry, but Sean Dash made some subs, and those subs were got the impact that we wanted. So we came away with a point, and that's at the end of the day what the record books will say, and that's all that matters.
What have you made then of Burnley's starts to the season? Because Ashley Barnes obviously has been one of the main men for Burnley, scored plenty of goals at the start of the season. Actually, the whole of 2019, he's been one of the leading goal scorers in this calendar year in the Premier League. Who have been the players that have really shone for Burnley in the early stages of this season?
For me, it's James Tarkowski. Obviously, you've already mentioned Ashley Barnes, and he scored plenty of goals. But it's James Tarkowski. I think for me, he's our best player. I think if there was a long term injury to him, I was just saying on the podcast this morning, if there's a long term injury to him, I think we will struggle. We have Kevin Long and Gibson on the bench to come in, but James Tarkowski is head and shoulders above them too, and he's been fantastic so far this season. And it were a bit of a travesty that they didn't get called up into the England squad. But for me, I'd probably put Tarkie above Ashley Barnes, a bit of a controversial opinion amongst Burnley fans, but he's been fantastic so far this season as Tarkie.
Are you surprised that one of the new signings, I think we've talked in the past about how Eric Peters has started ahead of Charlie Taylor, that Jay Rodriguez obviously has returned to Burnley, a Burnley lad that is back at his home club. Are you surprised that he hasn't had more starts this season, that the likes of Aaron Lennon have actually started quite a few games, or is it a case of, in particular, that front two of Barnes and Wood work so well together that it's no surprise that Sean Dyche hasn't actually changed that?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think I know Jay can drop back and play on the wings, but I think Dash is always going to put an out-and-out winger there, like Lennon or Hendrick, or obviously Goodmanson when Goodmanson comes back from injury. But I think with Jay, it's a case of just having to wait his turn because the front two, especially Barnes, have been playing so well. There's a few question marks over Chris Wood now because he hasn't scored so far this season, but Chris Wood does a lot of work off the ball that keeps his place in the team. But I think if Chris Wood carries on not scoring, and it was a little bit quieter against Brighton, and he came off and Vidra came on and played well alongside Barnes up top. So I think there might be a few questions asked, like I said, over Chris Wood, and Jay might end up getting a run out or a start, should I say, there if Dyche does drop Wood. But I think with Dyche, you've always got to be patient to get your turn in the team. Even James Tarkowski, which I've just praised, he had to do the same as well.
I wanted to get your views, Joe, on the goalkeeping situation. Obviously, last season was a very peculiar one, with obviously Nick Pope being out for quite a while due to injury. Joe Hart was in there, and when Burnley's form wasn't great, he was kind of scapegoated for that. Then Tom Heaton came back in after injury. He then made a big difference and was praised. He obviously then left in the summer to Aston Villa. Were you happy with that situation, how it unfolded, that Tom Heaton, the more experienced but older player, went on to a Premier League rival, I suppose, in Aston Villa, and that Nick Pope, the younger, perhaps more potential? I personally think actually Nick Pope should be ahead of Jordan Pickford as England's number one at the moment. Were you happy that that was the decision that Sean Dyche came to? He was quite strong in that opinion. He didn't string them along any further. He made the decision that Heaton was the one to go, even though he'd been at the club for many years, and Nick Pope is most certainly the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never say I was happy to see Tom Heaton go. The guy's a club legend. Obviously, he captained the club, as you say, for years. He captained us through two promotions, one title-winning season. So I was never happy to see such a club legend leave. And he is a legend. He'll always be a legend, even though he's playing for Villa now. It's a shame he didn't go abroad or go into the Championship, because he is going to be playing against us in the next few weeks, actually. So that will be difficult to watch. But I totally understand Sean Dyche's decision. For me, the longevity is there in Nick Pope. He will be at the club, hopefully now, for like the next 5 years. And when he does come on to go to a bigger and better club, say, for example, if he continues improving and a top six club comes knocking, or we get relegated, we can then sell him on for, it might sound stupid, but around 40, 50 million quid with the way that the market's going these days. I mean, for example, you just mentioned that you think he should be ahead of Pickford in the England team. If Everton went to sell Pickford now, they won't be an eyelid bastard if they sold him for 50 million quid. So if Nick Pope is in and around that area, I can't see why we can't get that for him. But yeah, disappointed to see Tom leave. Out of the three, I'd have preferred to see Joe Hart leave, but can totally understand A, Tom's reasoning for leaving, and B, Sean Dash's reasoning for letting Tom leave.
Burnley are currently in 13th in the table, 5 points from five games. It is still very early, and there's such a fine margin that actually Burnley are only 3 points off Tottenham, who are in third. Have your views changed in these first five games of the season in terms of your aims for the season, where you think Burnley should be finishing this season?
Yeah, I think they fluctuate quite a lot, especially so early in the season. Like before the start of the season, it's always a case of get to 40 points, make sure you stop up, finish 17th and then go from there. But after the home win against Southampton, I was thinking, hey, we could be finishing in the top 10 here. That were a fantastic performance. But obviously since then, we've stagnated a little bit. Admittedly, we played Arsenal away, Liverpool at home and Wolves away, so three of the top seven. And we've more than held our own in every game. Should have got a win at Wolves. But then, obviously, there was a poorish performance against Brighton. I still think we'll be... I think I said to you last time on the show, didn't I? There's the top six, then there's a battle for the best of the rest, and then there's the best of the rest of the rest. And I think we can be at the top of that third league table, I think we can do that.
And just finally, then, Joe, looking ahead to the weekend's action, it's a home game against Norwich, who will be bouncing off the back of that incredible win against Manchester City. These are surely the type of games where kind of we will learn more from Burnley. These are games that I'm sure you will be thinking, we have to win these games. It's a home game at Turf Moor, where Burnley tend to have a good record, and against the Norwich side that will look to attack. They will look to come to Turf Moor and play some quite kind of aggressive and positive football, that you must be looking at us and thinking, this is it's far too early to say it's a must win, but it's the 3 points that Burnley realistically should be getting at home.
100%. Like, I think before the weekend, I'd have earmarked it as a 99% win. I'm probably a little bit more sceptical now, because Norwich were fantastic against Man City. Hats off to them. What they did against Man City are incredible. So many promoted teams have tried to do it recently. And Man City are just too good for anybody apart from Norwich. All right, they had a little bit of a helping hand in terms of some defensive mistakes, but that was because of the way that Norwich play. As a Burnley fan, yeah, you've got to be looking at this game and thinking 3 points. I think, in a weird way, even though Man City are obviously 10 times better than Burnley ever will be, I think in a weird way, the way that we play might help us, because I think Norwich will come to attack us. We're obviously quite compact and we can sit back and soak up all the pressure and then hit them with some set pieces and counter-attacks. So, yeah, these are definitely the games where you will learn a lot about Burnley, and which will essentially at the end of May define Burnley's season. If we're losing games against Sheffield United at home, Norwich at home, and Watford at home, and teams like that, then ultimately we will struggle. So yeah, I've got to be going into it a little bit confident, despite Norwich's win at the weekend. And yeah, we have to be winning these sort of games. No disrespect to Norwich, because they were fantastic against City and they've had a great start as well.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Joe. That was Joe Redmond from the Turfcast podcast, talking to us through all things Burnley after their 1-1 draw away at Brighton last weekend. And we were just mentioning there about their next game, which is at home at Turf Moor on Saturday afternoon against Norwich, who will be so confident after their display against Manchester City. But the way the Premier League goes, Burnley will probably win 2-0 on the weekend, and Norwich might be brought back down to earth, because Turf Moor is a tough place to go, and Sean Dyche will make sure that Burnley are well organised for that game, because they know Norwich will come and play. I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley only have about 25% possession on Saturday, and that will suit Sean Dyche's team absolutely down to the ground. I think Norwich's style might mean they're unstuck on Saturday afternoon. That's the end of the Premier League fan show. Just a reminder of some of the games that are coming up tonight in the Champions League. Two English sides in action. Tottenham away at Olympiacos. Manchester City away at Shakhtar Donetsk. Some other news from other European football. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has confirmed that Daniel James is out of Manchester United's Europa League game against Astana tomorrow night.
This is Love Sport.